Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra, who is feeling tip-top physical and mental condition. Aren't you, Sondra?
I mean, sometimes I just can't handle your lies. It's just so much. Did my voice just start sounding worse, like just now, since I got on the phone? This is bullshit. Anyway, I woke up sick this morning, and I'm not very happy about it, but that's okay, because I am happy to talk about wrestling, because there's a lot of really fun stuff going on.
It was another good Wednesday night.
Wednesday nights seem to just be lovely. Like, I wish that everything didn't happen on a Wednesday night, and that, like, I didn't have other things on Wednesday night, because that means starting it late, and then it just becomes this whole situation. But, like, the wrestling's really good. I'm kind of glad I saved NXT to watch second, because I think I enjoyed that show more this week, and it helped keep me awake.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing of all the shows happened on AEW, but I think the better show of the week was NXT for me.
Yeah, that's
that
fair.
Very quickly before we talk about it, I just wanted to get your take because you are the female representation here at Inside the Ropes, if you knew that.
Yep, I'm the token. I understand.
You know, you hit the quota. I wondered how you would feel about the idea that they have announced they're going to do Lacey Evans, and we're recording this right before Crown Jewel happens. They're going to do a Lacey Evans Natalia match at the show. Does this mean anything? Is it good? Does it matter? I'm just curious if it provoked any emotions or thoughts from you.
I mean, first of all, it's Natalia versus Lacey Evans again. But yeah, I think it, like, I'm of two minds about it, right? I think on one hand, it's super great that they're getting to do a match. I think it's awesome. I think that I remember when Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss did their match in the UAE, and it was like, it was a really big deal. And it was a really big deal for women in the crowd to actually, like, see themselves represented in the ring, right? And I think that that's super awesome. I think it does indicate some sort of progress, like some sort of, I don't know, like WWE is managing to work with them and kind of like change the rules slightly and soften the rules on some things. On the other hand, it also feels kind of a lot like, hey, look, we're putting women on the show, so everything's fine and fixed now, when everything's really not fine and fixed now in Saudi Arabia, right? Like, I fear that they're just going to use this as a propaganda move to say, like, hey, remember when we said that we were going to try and get women on the card and now we did? And that's proving how progressive Saudi Arabia is becoming and how progressive WWE is helping Saudi Arabia to become. Like, I don't want it to just sort of wash over a lot of the other very problematic things. So, yes, I think it's great and I think it does signal progress. I don't want people to think, like, oh, this means everything's fine now, because everything's not fine now.
That's fair.
I don't know. What do you think about it?
Which is funny. I put a tweet out about it and I ended up deleting the tweet because I feel like we're just in this era where, like, you can't point out a positive. Like, I'm kind of with you. Like, it doesn't negate the other issues, but, like, they've got a fucking women's match. That's what people were complaining. That's one of the things, sorry. Not everything. But that was one of the big complaints. And they've got a women's match. And I'm not saying that all of a sudden it should be like, they're so great for going there, because that's not the case. But It just feels like, even though they have made a little bit of progress, that's just not even being mentioned. And, you know, that's kind of frustrating. But, I think for like women in Saudi Arabia, that's going to be cool for them. And for women, you know, it's another step getting more women on the shows over there. So, you know, this is one of the things they said they were trying to do, and they've got it done in like 18 months. So, you know, it is something. But yeah, I'm with you. I hope that it doesn't become like, here's a new propaganda. Like, last year,
that's my concern, because it's not like, you know,
last year women got to learn to drive
in one of these spots, right? Like, they can't, and they're never going to bring Sami Zayn over because they can't. And there are still a whole bunch of super, super problematic things about WWE's relationship with Saudi Arabia. But, like, I am happy for the incremental step.
Go to Pro Wrestling Tees and buy Sami Zayn's new t-shirt.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
With all the money going to a good cause. But yeah, hopefully we just don't see a promo video that says, you know, last year women got to drive, now they get to wrestle in full clothing that shows no skin. I'm like, do you see what the guy's wrestling?
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, because I haven't watched any of the Saudi Arabia shows except the first one, and I know all of them haven't been like the first one was with all of the propaganda and stuff that made me feel so icky and gross, but I feel like they're going to be hyping up the historic first ever women's match in Saudi Arabia, and that is historic. Like, I don't want to take away from the fact that that is historic, but at the same time, it's like, hey, we're doing everything right now. You can just forget that we're still killing people for being gay and bombing people and all of this stuff.
So with that in mind, let's talk about the Wednesday Night Wars continue. This is the first week where I know there was a big sports, like the World Series was on again, but like when I was watching these shows, I was like, I'm not confident that either of the shows are gonna stay what they were last week.
Oh, I don't think they will. Not with the World Series. Everyone watches that.
I'm also curious.
I didn't watch it, though. I don't actually know. Was it the last game of it yesterday?
The seventh game, which is like a big one or something?
The seventh one is the last one. Okay, if it was the seventh one, then that finished. I think I saw that the Nationals won. I think I saw someone mention them. I don't actually know. I don't follow sports.
I love the idea that if somebody's listened to this being like, I'll catch the World Series at the weekend, Sondra, of all people, has spoiled who won the World Series.
I don't think anyone is going to not know who won the World Series by today. Like, it's if I know who won the World Series, that means it's everywhere.
The one thing I'm kind of intrigued about is that there's been no point where NXT has beaten AEW at any point, like in any quarter of any show. But I'm curious about, because Ollie and I were watching it live on the stream, like, how many people when Hikaru Shida and Shanna were having their match, so you know, just turned over because Finn Balor did his promo. So, because that was the exact same time.
Oh, okay.
That happened. So, that's something that's interesting. But I guess we'll see by the time the overrun comes up, we'll know. But
It was interesting because, like, I started watching AEW first, and then I was on Twitter and I saw that Poppy was going to be at NXT, and then, like, I saw, oh, Poppy's here at NXT, and I tried to switch over to NXT, but the method by which I watch live television was not allowing me to watch NXT, so I just stuck with AEW. But yeah, I was like, I found myself more compelled by NXT, and if I had been able to watch, like, one of the entire shows, like, fully, because I had something to do at 9, I was kind of more drawn in by what NXT had to offer, but maybe that's just because I'm more into that show.
True, very true. So what one do you want to kick off with? Every week you say you don't know, just pick one.
AEW.
Okay, so we'll kick off with AEW Dynamite. We open the show with Tony Schiavone standing outside a jet, talking about the contract signing with Chris Jericho and Cody. Dustin exits the plane, then Cody comes out, they hug. Schiavone and Cody get into a limo together. I don't know if this is... don't want to be patronizing to the listeners, but this is similar to like a Ric Flair thing that apparently happened years ago where he came off a jet and like he was going to a big title match and Schiavone was it's like a play on something that's happened before is the idea.
That's cool.
So that's kind of the beginning of the show, and then we get this segment which was because it's a video package hyping what happened with Moxley and Pac and anything that happened after it went off the air, and then we see John Moxley entering Tony Khan's office. We don't see Tony Khan, but we see like subtitles of what they're saying. Khan say that he can't sanction the match at full gear. It would have to be a lights out match, meaning that it won't count on his win-loss record. Moxley's pissed about it and says whatever happens to Kenny Omega is on him. What did you make of this segment?
Okay, so I didn't see the whole plane thing because I didn't get home until 8:03, but it sounds really cool. I like the idea of it. I liked what they did with Cody and Tony Schiavone later on. I think it's interesting that, like, Cody's supposed to be the likable guy at this point, and he is. Like, he's still very much likable in AEW, but, like, he's this handsome dude in suits, riding around in planes and all this stuff. Like, he shouldn't be likable. He should be, like, you know, like he's in charge of the company. We shouldn't like him, but we do. I just think it's an interesting dynamic.
Most people that would fail. Like with most people that would not work.
Right. But there's just, I don't know, there's something about him that works. I'm not complaining about it. I think it's great. But it's just, like, can you imagine? I mean, this is essentially what Roman Reigns' character was in NXT as a heel, you know? But, so yeah, I don't know. I think just the dynamic with Cody is interesting. But I did see Jon Moxley storm out of Tony Khan's office. And I thought that was interesting. Because they haven't really used Tony Khan as, like, a television character, right? Up until this point.
They have not.
So I don't know. Interesting that he's being kind of brought in, but he wasn't even on screen, so it wasn't like he was the focal point. It was just like he's kind of behind things, I suppose. And they didn't want to have Moxley like go to Cody or Kenny or any of them because obviously they're going to be on side with Kenny Omega. So I don't know. I thought it was an interesting step to go to Tony Khan, and I really like Moxley's dynamic. I like the fact that he wants to kick Kenny's ass. I hated Dean Ambrose, and I'm kind of a real big fan of Jon Moxley, and I don't know what to do with it.
Moxley's good. The only thing, like, I like the segment, and I like the idea that Tony Khan's, like, not a full character. The only thing here is that because they're going with this kind of sports presentation of, like, wins and losses matter, like, here, Moxley seemed pissed that the win or loss would not matter. It'd have to be unsanctioned. But then later on, he didn't care about win and losses mattering. I don't know, maybe that's a change because of what happened here, but this is the third Lights Out match that we've seen so far. And I think after this next one, I'm hoping we don't see another one for like a year.
It does seem to be kind of overused.
Because they're not really my style of match. And one was Joey Janela and Jon Moxley. Who was the other one? Was it Omega and Janela?
Omega and Janela on Dark, right?
Was that a lights out match? Was that unsanctioned?
I didn't think that was unsanctioned. I thought that was sanctioned.
I can
only think of Moxley and Janela.
But yeah, so I mean, the idea they're having this lights out match, the unsanctioned one, like I think it's a cool concept. I just hope that it doesn't. I mean, it's an easy way to get out of not having a win loss to go in the record, but I would rather they didn't go to that well too many times. It's just a cautionary, you know, thing that I was thinking about.
Yeah, no, and I think that's fair. I think you don't want to overuse it because then it just becomes kind of standard, and it does feel like a cop out to not have a win and loss go on the record. I think it's cool that an unsanctioned match doesn't count toward your win loss record. Like, I think that's an interesting story wrinkle, but I'm with you.
So we kick off the show with Hangman Adam Page against Sammy Guevara. They have a fun match for the 8 minutes that Page gets to win. And then post-match, he takes the mic, says things haven't been going too well, but now he's going to do some real cowboy shit and he's going to take Pac's head off. Big cowboy shit chant. Jim Ross is saying, there's a shirt. Hangman Adam Page arrived on this show.
Yeah, I thought he was great. Like, Adam Page versus Sammy Guevara, I knew was going to be a good match. Like, it has to be a good match. There's no way that that's not going to be a good match. But he felt interesting again. He felt like, because the thing is, like, I didn't watch a ton of Adam Page in Japan, but, like, I watched a little bit, and he always felt like a really big star. And I think earlier on, like, at All Out, he felt like a really big star. And I think that that's been kind of, like, dipping a little bit for me lately. But here, he felt like a really big star again. And I like the fact that he's not necessarily going for the title again right away, because I don't think that, you know, he needs to. I think he kind of needs to be built up a little bit more. But I'm into Hangman Page versus Pac. I think that it's great. And I like that he's showing fire. And I like that he's, you know, upset about stuff and going to do some cowboy shit.
We've talked about, like, one of the things that AEW needed to do more of was give some promo time to people. And Page is a prime guy that we needed to see promo time. Because, like, last week he did the stuff when the show had went off the air. And it was like, this guy really should be on the air doing stuff. Because he needs
to. What did he do off the air?
When he came out after the tag match, after it was Moxley and Pac against Omega and, or was it Page? When did he came out? Oh no! So yeah, no. Last week it was Moxley and Pac did the draw, and then Omega came out to save Moxley from the Pac attack. Moxley and Omega went face to face. Then Pac went up to the stage and then backed into Page, who kind of chased him down to the ring, and then Pac kind of ran away, and people were cheering for Page. And they did that on the... They showed it in the video package at the beginning of this show, but they also... I mean, because I've got the Fight TV version, that's what I watch. So I so Fight TV automatically gives you whatever happens when it goes off the air.
Oh, okay.
But I think that needed to be on the air, but I think here, him giving a promo, and the good thing is you can kind of go either way, because if he beats Pac, then he's kind of got some momentum again. If he doesn't beat Pac, then, you know, is doing some real cowboy shit going to mean he goes heel or something? Like, there's some good options to Paige, and I'm glad that he's developing his character a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm here for options. I like when there are multiple possibilities and it's not just like, he must win or his career is doomed. Like, I don't think that we're in that situation at all.
Yeah. Then we had Shanna, who is the Portuguese premier athlete, I think her name is. Her nickname against Hikaru Shida. They have this, like, 10-minute match. It's a pretty good match. I think the thing that it suffered from was that the fans didn't really know who Shanna was. Shida, they know a little bit, but she's not really, like, one of the more developed characters in AEW. So even though... I think they both wrestle in Stardom, I think, is what I was told.
Oh, okay.
But I think that not really knowing who they were kind of hurt it, and especially when we were, like, watching the split screen, like, as soon as Balor came out, we were like, okay, see you later. Like, we were focusing on that. But they seemed to have a decent match. I just think that the crowd not really knowing who they were kind of hurt it. What did you think?
I mean, that's pretty much how I feel about it. I don't really know who either of these women are, just because they're not, like, they haven't really come across my radar. I know that we've seen Shida before. I enjoyed it. I thought they wrestled really well. I think when Shida won, I think they put over Shanna quite well and said that, like, you know, Shanna, you might not have gotten the job done today, but, like, she proved that she's a competitor and she proved that she belongs here. So maybe that's going to be more opportunities for her. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, like, it was nice. It felt like a little bit of a filler, just watch some good wrestling match. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I like good wrestling matches. It's just not the one that really, like, stuck out to me as, oh, wow, I must pay attention to this because it matters so, so much to me.
Yeah, which is fair. Then we had Jim Ross was talking about, you know, what's been going on with Brandi Rhodes. And, you know, he doesn't really know what the answer is. And then we get this video package where, like, Brandy's like putting on a black veil and there's candles and rituals and awesome Kongs there. I am here for all of this.
Has Brandi Rhodes become possessed?
I hope,
like,
so.
Is that the story?
I fucking love
because
it.
Because it sounds brilliant. Like, she had green flashing eyes and she's like in a circle of candles and awesome Kongs there yelling things, but, like, you can't hear her, but she's doing her, like, Kong scream thing that she's so awesome at. Like, if an actual demon has possessed the two of them and is binding them together in some sort of blood contract with the devil, I'm so here for it.
It was so good. I'm so glad to see it.
What if the Dark Order's involved? What if the Dark Order possessed Brandi Rhodes? How are you going to feel about that?
I'd be really disappointed because they're so, like, they're like Poundland Wyatt family. Like, honestly, like, their gear is a travesty that's on national television. Like, if this came out in NXT, I'd rip it to fucking shreds. As it should be ripped to shreds. Like, the Dark Order is, like, a cool concept, but, like, you don't have money in the AEW budget to get gear for these people that doesn't look like they went to Dollarama. I'm trying to think of all Poundland released references across the countries. But, you know,
Dollar Tree here in the United States.
One of the things I'm going to say to one of the things I intend to ask Brandi on stage inside the Rhodes next weekend, which you can get on Fight TV, is, you know, the idea that before she was managing Cody, which is kind of more of a babyface thing. And then she was with Kong. It was more of a heel thing. And I think that kind of hurt her as a character. They seem to have moved away from that now. I want to ask her about what the motivation was to move away from that. Is it kind of what we were talking about on various podcasts? But this was
well,
great.
And is she like proper heel now? Because attacking Jamie Hayter again was weird because Jamie Hayter was a heel, but then Brandi Rhodes attacked her, but then was like, I'm watching you, and now she's possessed by the devil? Question mark.
I like those questions.
I like that there's questions. It's just, it seems like a lot. It seems like a lot all at once, and it is very confusing. I mean, I'm intrigued to see more. I'm not like, fuck this, but. You know,
I hope this all plays out on TV. Like, rather than,
yeah, because
like,
I'm not watching the extra stuff.
Like, what?
And I shouldn't
what,
have to.
What YouTube channel do I need to go to? Like, where am I going to Nightmare Family? I don't know. We got Chris Van Vliet bringing out the Rock and Roll Express. Oh dear Lord, Sandra. Like, these men in the 1980s were sex symbols.
It's baffling.
Like, can you imagine having sex with one of the Rock and Roll Express?
No.
At any point in their life?
No.
How old do you think Ricky Morton is?
1,205.
He's 63 years old.
How is he 63 years old?
He's 10 years younger than Helen Mirren.
That's insane. Like, he's a couple years, like, older than my dad, but, like, my dad does not look that old at all.
He's 17 years younger than Ian McKellen.
That's insane.
Anyway, they come out and, like, I kind of love them, and, like, I just, you know, they're coming out and they're like, and for whatever reason, the AEW crowd love the Rock and Roll Express.
Well, like, because the Rock and Roll Express are still working the indies. Like, the Rock and Roll Express have not stopped working. Like,
they're doing
they're
a New Japan show
things.
At some point soon.
Yes. Is... So, I mean, the AEW crowd, which, you know, comes from a lot of indie wrestling fans and all that kind of stuff. Of course we love the Rock and Roll Express. The Rock and Roll Express are just sort of, like, fixtures on the indie scene at this point. And they're just, I don't know, they're an enigma. Like, they look like a bag of shit, but I do love them. And I think this is a great use of... I mean, obviously, we'll get to them being attacked and stuff, but even just if they were to come out and present the belts and just have it be a presentation with the Rock and Roll Express presenting the tag belts, I think that's a brilliant use of legends. It's so much better than trying to put them in a match at this point, even though they're still working matches.
Well, I think was the reason... Well, first of all, Ricky Morton's hair. Can you just discuss it in detail, please?
I mean, Ricky Morton's hair is the stuff of legend. The blonde mullet is just...
And then there's a good like 7-inch gap of baldness before the front of the hair at the top of the head.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Just exceptional. I often wonder, does Nick Jackson look at that and go, there's things out there I can do now to make sure that, like, that kind of stuff would never happen to me. You know, like, I feel like if it was me, I'd be looking going, I can't be Ricky Morton one day.
Like, how can I prevent this situation? But I mean, he's almost getting, like, the Hulk Hogan situation, right? Like, it's not as severe as Hogan with the, like, completely bald and blonde hair hanging down, but, like, it's not entirely far off.
It's not hugely far off. I think what was good about it was, like, because the thing is, sometimes in WWE we do criticize the idea that they just bring legends out to have them be beat up, but I think what works about this was that Santana and Ortiz are these, like, top level heels, and they kind of needed something. And also, like, you kind of could at some point down the road have the Rock and Roll Express have a match with Santana and Ortiz, and I think that in there's not a lot of places where I think that would work, but in AEW I think it probably would, and I think there's a way to do it that, like, you know, they could get a little bit of heat, and then obviously Santana and Ortiz would eventually cause their untimely death, but it could be fun. So I like the use of the Rock and Roll Express. I thought it was better than I envisioned it being, so it was a thumbs up from me.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with Legends coming back and getting beaten up. I have no problem with that whatsoever. I have a bigger problem with Legends coming back and beating up current roster members. So I think this was perfect. And plus, the Rock and Roll Express are so beloved by the crowd that it made Santana and Ortiz feel like absolute dickheads, which is what they're supposed to feel like. So, and the Young Bucks are obviously, like, they're aghast at this situation. And they're just like, what is going on? This is the most dastardly thing we've ever seen. And I don't know, the whole segment I thought worked. They threw the Rock and Roll Express in a hole.
They did. They really did. Then we had Schiavone and Cody in the limo. They talk about, you know, Schiavone tells a story about Dusty Rhodes making sure Willie Nelson was in a pool before he came out, because a star always comes out last. Cody talks about his mum coming, how he shared a locker room with Jericho. Tony's telling him, you know, take all the emotion of your mum watching Baltimore and let it drive you. And then, you know, Tony said it means a lot to be with Cody due to the history with the family. And this was great. This was so good. This is, like, reminds me of, like, Austin and JR in some ways. And I mean that as a real compliment. Like, who knew Tony Schiavone was so badly needed again in pro wrestling, because he's the best.
This was brilliant. I loved this segment. Like, it felt really different. Like, I understand what you mean about it feeling like Austin and JR, but, like, I liked this better in a way. Like, I don't know, just touching on the family history in a way that didn't seem cheesy. It didn't seem like it was being forced out there. It felt like a conversation that Tony Schiavone, who was friends with Dusty Rhodes, would be having with Dusty Rhodes' son. And Cody wasn't just like, I'm dwelling on my dad, I'm dedicating my match to him, which is easily how this could have gone. But he was just like, yep, that sounds like a Dusty story. Oh, it's really cool that my mom's coming, you know, and Tony's like, oh, yeah, that's awesome that she's coming. Let that emotion drive you. It felt like a really real conversation because it was, because they have a real relationship with one another. And I don't know, this was absolutely brilliant. And this is the kind of stuff that makes me invested in the performer.
And it's working. It's working in every sense of the word. Up next, we had, so obviously, Ricky and Morty are the show. I've never seen the show, so I'm the worst person to ask.
Rick and Morty. I've not watched much of the show, but I've seen some of it. It's very funny.
So Rick and Morty is, there's some crossover here. So it was involved in this match because there was some dress up with Best Friends and Orange Cassidy against three job guys, John Silver, Alex Reynolds, and QT Marshall. And they have this match, which was kind of comedy based, and Trent and Chuck and Orange Cassidy got the win. Fans of the crowd loved it. What say you, Sandra?
I loved it. This warmed my little Northeast wrestling loving heart because the Beaver Boys were back and QT Marshall was on the show. And Best Friends and Orange Cassidy dressed as Rick and Morty was just a delight, an absolute delight. Bryce Remsburg was the ref. I loved all of this. I love comedy matches. I love Best Friends. I love Orange Cassidy. This was specifically 100% tailored for someone like me, and I ate it up. I thought it was brilliant, and I like seeing Best Friends win a thing.
This was not for me, which is
this
fine.
Is not surprising.
Yeah, no, I don't think it worked. I think it would work live better than on TV. I just don't think it clicked fully, for me anyway. But it's interesting to see how they're going to go forward. Cause I think Orange Cassidy could be a big star if he's used sparingly. And I think that if the more they use him, the more danger you get of it becoming too overexposed. But the compliment I give to AEW is what they've seemed to do so far, and which makes him work a bit more for me, is that people don't sell for the shit that he does. They only sell for like when he does a proper move, which to me is where the real comedy of it would be. Is that, you know, he does his shtick and people are just like, what the fuck is this? And then he finally does something, they get taken down by it. And that's, I think, what's going to work on a big scale for him. So they're doing it the right way.
Because then it's
way.
Almost like they underestimate him, because I see him doing like ridiculous things and they're like, who is this guy? This is ridiculous. But oh, wait, he's actually one of the best wrestlers in the world. I forgot.
I've not seen any of that yet. But yes, he is a good wrestler. I'll put it that way. But he, I think that they're going about it in the right way in terms of it getting over to a mass crowd, if that makes sense, because that's kind of what they're going for. So while it wasn't for me, I'm curious to see if this is, because sooner or later they were going to have to do some kind of stuff that brought some people to the dance, like, you know, like some of the shtick that people liked about some of the characters that they brought in. You have to eventually do it. You can't really bring Orange Cassidy and not have him be Orange Cassidy.
Right, so, because why would you bring him in otherwise? That doesn't make any sense. I thought it was interesting how loudly the Beaver Boys and QT Marshall got booed before the match. I was like, wow, people really hate them, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's
why.
Good, though. Like, I think maybe they just knew that they were facing Best Friends and Orange Cassidy, and they were like, boo these guys, we want our favorites. I don't know, but that shows that something's working, because why else would they be booing them so loudly? Like, they don't know who these guys are.
Yeah, it's a thing.
I was just glad because it showed that the crowd was invested.
And I like the idea that they are going about, because the thing is, like, they don't need to win you over with Orange Cassidy. Mm-mm. You love them, but I think they do need to win over people like me, or people like Ollie, or people like Jamie, or, you know, other people who that might not be their kind of shtick. And I think the way to do it is to kind of ease people into it. So I think they are easing people into it more, which is good. So
yeah, and it is good, and they're not doing it in a way that feels egregious or patronizing to fans of Orange Cassidy. It feels like they've struck a good balance.
So I'm very curious to see how that's going to go for the next 6 months. Up next to me was my favorite thing over both shows, which was the contract signing segment with Cody and Chris Jericho. Fight me to show me a better match this year that's been built for a mass audience of a babyface and a heel. Please.
Oh, no, it's absolutely brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant.
Like, Chris Jericho's Halloween jacket is just...
At first, I thought it was a shirt, and then when I saw a zoomed-in image, and it turned out to be a jacket with a collar, and he was wearing a blazer with no shirt underneath, and the blazer was bright purple and had pumpkins all over it. Bless him. Just bless him for being such a douchebag.
Oh, whoa. So as we're doing this, you know, today's Crown Jewel, and I'm just kind of like, somebody had said, can someone make a thread, you know, if people want to comment about the show? And, and someone just wrote, Brock and Kane is on first.
Really?
Okay.
That's interesting.
Anyway,
that's a choice.
Choices. Chris Jericho comes out in his Halloween-themed jacket. He sets the belt on the table. Cody's limo arrives. He comes to the building. Shivani kind of comes with him. And Tony Schiavone's hosting the segment. Jericho calls him Schiavone. Best thing
no,
ever.
No, he said... Didn't he say Schiavone?
Schiavone, yeah. Just totally mispronounced it. I think he'd done that before, apparently, in WCW.
I might be wrong.
So. There's going to be judges, which I assume we'll meet next week. What do you make of the judges thing? We haven't talked about that. There's going to be three judges that, in the event of a 60-minute time limit draw, would decide a winner and a loser. It's more of a sports-based thing. And before TNA did it in 2004, and because I didn't know that, I've just been dragged through the coals for thinking this might be a good idea. Because apparently if TNA did it, then anyone else is going to do it the exact bad way that TNA did it. But what do you think of it?
I think it's interesting. I wasn't watching TNA in 2004. I wasn't watching wrestling in 2004. TNA did a similar thing with their, like, they did that, like, rounds system with judges and stuff, which didn't go super well. But this is really, like, only in the event of a draw, which leads me to believe that this match is going to go 60 minutes. Like, that's the only thing is, if there are these judges, and if it's a 60-minute time limit, then does that mean we're 100% getting a 60-minute match with them? Like,
I don't think it does.
Because I think the more interesting thing to do would be to have the judges there and not have it go 60 minutes so that they don't end up being necessary. Because then it might feel like, okay, well, the judges didn't have to make a decision. But, like, you don't want them to have to be called in to make a decision, right? And I think that would feel more sports-based again, because then it's like, oh, so AEW is teaching us that even if they set up a clear thing, like, it seems like a best of five series is always going to go five matches or whatever. Like, maybe not. Maybe that's not how it works in this world. I don't know. Like, I don't think it's the worst idea in the world. I haven't seen the bad execution of it. I think it could go well and it could not go well. I just don't know. Like, I'd have to see it in execution.
Yeah, because to me, I'm intrigued by the idea, but execution could make or break it.
Yeah, but, like, it could be just real stupid, but it could be great. I don't know.
But then, like, a lot of the execution of stuff that they have done in ways that I haven't liked in the past, I have liked here. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because it's AEW. I just think they've executed things in a better way.
Well, we were talking about, like, Cody should come across as a heel, and he doesn't, because it just works. And when things just work, like, normally I wouldn't like Chris Jericho being champion, because he's such a, like, established guy. He's old, like, why are you just putting your belt on a former WWE guy, brother? Like, I've seen that comment across the internet plenty, but I disagree with it because it just works here. Like, Chris Jericho is brilliant. He's amazing. Like, it is disgusting how good he is at his job, and he 100% should be champion, even if I was hesitant about it at first.
He's the biggest name they've got. He's proven every week that he should be the champion. He's just so good in this time. He's getting up and kind of, like, pretending he's going to go for Cody and all that kind of stuff, and
what was his line about, like, this is too important to flip a table at you or something?
Yeah, this match is too important to flip a table. It's the best, the most important match of the year. Biggest match of the year, biggest match of your career, Cody.
That was quite a dig.
Yeah?
Like, this is obviously the biggest match of your career because you've always wondered what it's like to be world champion.
People are chanting Cody. Jericho says that if Cody loses, then he'll prove to Cody and all the entitled millennial jackasses here tonight that Cody isn't as good as he thinks he is. It is disgusting how good Chris Jericho is at his job.
Yeah. Yep. He's incredible. Like,
Jericho said he'd teach Cody a lesson. Anyway, so he signs the contract. Cody signs it. Cody removes his jacket. Jericho saying, "Calm down, hillbillies." Great. And then Jericho said, "You know, we're two professionals. We're not going to make a mockery of the title." And then he, Cody shook his hand, and Jericho comes in and says, "You know, I could stay here all night, but you might be needed elsewhere." We see Sammy Guevara in the parking lot. It's Jake Hager beating up Dustin Rhodes, and then he uses the low blow. He uses the low blow, which is what he was disqualified or the MMA fight was ended for on Friday night at Bellator. He's used it in a wrestling angle. Then he slams a, you know, he slams Dustin's head off of a car door. Then smashes his arm off the car door. Dustin's in agony. Jericho shows up, lights a cigar, and drives off while Cody's cradling Dustin as they go to the hospital. This was like world class. I can't remember the last time that there was a main event world title match that was built so well and was so definitively babyface versus heel.
And had other ramifications throughout the show because of the faction contingent here, right? Like, I love the fact that Sammy Guevara came up on the screen and he comes across as such a prick, which is great. Like, he's a very attractive young dude. Like, the twink audience basically is like going to love him, but he's such a prick about everything. He's just like, hey, I didn't see the contract signing because I saw something else. And then Cody seeing his brother getting his ass handed to him, like, that's emotional. Like, of course Cody's going to go backstage. Of course he's going to want to go to Dustin. Of course he's going to want to help him out. And, I mean, like, Dustin getting his head rammed off the car and then making a dent, I was like, ooh, I don't like that. I don't like head injuries. But it looked brutal, and it worked. Again, it just worked.
It did. Then we got a six-man tag of Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against Kip Sabian, Jack Evans, and Angelico. Omega was wearing a Halloween mask and the Bucks were wearing their Street Fighter costumes. Goes about 10 minutes. I've got to say, this match didn't set my world on fire. It's kind of the kind of match with the Bucks and Omega that doesn't really work for me as well. I prefer when Omega's in more of a serious situation where he's going for something and the Bucks are in something that's like for something. I feel like that's when I like them more in the ring, but it was a good match. It just wasn't my favorite thing, but the crowd loved it, so who am I to judge? What did you make of the match?
I mean, it was fine. It was a lot of fun. It's about it. Like, I don't really have that many feelings toward it because I just don't think that, like, the Young Bucks have never really been my guys, you know? Like, they've just, I like them fine. I think they are good at what they do. Belter of a theme tune. Love the costumes. Think they're great. They're just not, like, they're not the people that I am the most invested in on the show, I suppose. I love Kenny Omega. I think he's great. I love Jack Evans and Angelico. I loved them in Lucha Underground, so I've kind of, you know, still been a fan of theirs. I think Kip Sabian is disgustingly beautiful. it was fun. It was pleasant, but I didn't, like, come away from it being like, this is the best match I've ever seen.
Then we had post-match Santana and Ortiz dressed in Rick and Morty masks attacking the Bucks and then taking off before Omega came involved. Do you think Santana and Ortiz watched Vince McMahon with the Steve Austin mask from 1998 and took took their idea from that?
They very well may have. I think the Rick and Morty integration in the show was kind of a lot, especially because the feed of it that I was watching involved all the commercials, because they do picture in picture for fucking everything now, which means it takes like an hour longer for me to watch these shows on a Wednesday night. Not that I was up until 4 a.m. doing this or anything. But yeah, like, so I saw a lot of Rick and Morty, and I like Rick and Morty. Again, I think they're very funny, but it was kind of a lot.
Especially for people, if people haven't seen Rick and Morty, it's like a lot of it.
Yeah, it's a lot of it. But that's fine, and it's cross-promotion, and I think that's, you know, it's clever to cross-promote with other things within your network and whatnot. I think Santana and Ortiz showing up again in the same show, like, showing up twice was actually a little bit unexpected, because you kind of feel like, well, they had their segment earlier where they attacked the Rock and Roll Express, but they're showing that they want to attack everyone, and they're going to even like have costume changes so that they can attack everyone. So I thought that was fun.
Then we had the Librarians coming out, who aren't working as well for me as I thought they were going to, but they came out and Moxley ended up interrupting, doing the Paradigm Shift DDT, formerly Dirty Deeds. Moxley then does a really heated promo where he talks about, you know, he's the baddest cat and he's, you know, he's going to beat your boy Kenny Omega. People treat him like a freak show and an outsider. He's the baddest and sickest SOB in the game. And if he thinks that he's out of control, you've not seen anything yet, he's going to beat Omega within an inch of his life, and fans will see beautiful violence, the likes of which hasn't been seen in this country in decades. And he said that his message for the AEW and Turner executives is the same thing he'll tell anyone who doesn't like him: kiss my ass and stay the hell out of my way. I mean, this is not Dean Ambrose, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I didn't like Dean Ambrose. I love John Moxley. I think he's so good. Like, I think he's brilliant. He's off the wall and he's crazy, but not in like a lunatic fringe sort of way. Like, he just feels like a dude who has a lot of stuff on his chest and he's pissed off, and it's great. Like, this is the best use of the librarians too, just like smooshing them into the ground.
Yes, short and sweet. But this is a great poem by Moxley. Maybe the best thing he's done so far in AEW since his debut for me. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I think it was great.
Yeah, it was brilliant. So, and then the main event was Lucha Brothers against SCU for the tag titles. I think it got really hot in the second half, and SCU ended up kind of getting the upset because Pentagon and Phoenix had taken out Kazarian, and then were trying to, you know, take out Scorpio Sky, and Scorpio Sky ends up doing an inside cradle to Pentagon, I think, while Kazarian took out Phoenix. They got the three count, and SCU are the first ever AEW Tag Team Champions. What did you make of the match and the decision to have SCU go over?
I thought the match was brilliant. I thought it was really, really good. There was no way it wasn't going to be good because these guys are great at professional wrestling. I was a little surprised, though. Like, I was surprised that SCU won over the Lucha Brothers because I really thought the Lucha Brothers were going to be it. And so I was kind of pleasantly surprised that SCU got it. I really like SCU, so I think that's, you know, like, I mean, I like both teams quite a lot. So I would have been happy either way, but it just seems like the Lucha Brothers are so established and kind of like really the best team they have. And maybe that's kind of good to subvert expectation. Like, they are still going to be great. Like, the Lucha Brothers are not going to be harmed by losing this match and by not being the first champions. And I don't know. Like, I really enjoyed it. Like, I thought a lot of the stuff was just crazy, and it was a lot of fun. I don't know. What did you think?
It was a fun main event. I was terrified they were going to have a time limit draw for the end of the show. Which kind of played in because, like, it feels like sometimes when we watch WWE, we would get a time limit draw. So, like, they kind of played in maybe to, like, your fear that that might happen, which was good. And I think SCU being the champs was a nice surprise. I definitely thought it was going to be the other way around. So, thumbs up show for me. I don't think it was quite as... I think there was a couple of things that just didn't really work for me. Like, the comedy match wasn't usually my thing. The six man wasn't really for me. So I feel like other weeks of AEW have clicked more for me, but it did have Cody and Jericho, which was the best.
Yeah, it was great. It was a thumbs up show. I mean, like, I'm not as invested in a lot of the AEW stuff as I am in some other promotions, but I think they're doing a great job. Like, it's a really good 2-hour television show.
It is a thumbs up show for me as well. So over in NXT, we had Poppy doing her song "I Disagree," spliced in with some clips of what's been going on. Nice to see Poppy again.
So good to see Poppy again. She looked amazing. There's like black and white strobe lights. It's all creepy. It's great. It's perfect for Halloween. Love it. Love it so much. And then she's saying "Scary Mask," and Io Shirai entered to "Scary Mask," and it was my favorite thing on either show. I loved her entrance. Poppy, I thought it was brilliant.
Poppy was lovely. And I'm not going to say no to a Candice LeRae Io Shirai rematch, Sandra.
No, nor am I. I enjoyed the hell out of this.
It wasn't quite as good as their takeover match, but it was still really, really good. And again, it's clever for them to show what they do better than the opposition, which is the women's division. And Candice LeRae trying everything to sort of not lose to Io Shirai. And Io Shirai finally getting the win. You know, I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed it. Io Shirai going over as well was interesting.
Well, because now she's just two up on Candice.
Yeah, two up on Candice. So,
which is great. Like, that sort of subverts your expectation too, right? Like, Io Shirai won the last one, so you think, oh, obviously Candice LeRae will win this one because that's how it works. And then they'll have a third match, and that's the way this trope normally goes. But I like that they're not doing that. And I don't think Candice LeRae is coming out of it looking as though she can't hang or though she's like incompetent or anything like that. I don't know, they're just playing it really, really well. I really want to see Candace beat her. Like, I really want to see Candace beat her so badly.
And then Io beat up Candice LeRae. I like the use of the chair as well in the match when Jessica was trying to take the chair away from Io, and then Candice hit Shirai with the twisty thing. And then anyway, it was really good. I liked the whole chair inclusion in the match. Io then tries
to ended up being Candice's downfall, right? Because she like did the splash onto the chair, and then that's what allowed Io Shirai to get the pin. So it was like, in a way, Io Shirai's chair did kind of cause the downfall of the match without causing her disqualification. Everything was just really well done.
And then he was beating up Candice after the match, and Rhea Ripley runs out with a wee haircut and makes the save by swinging the chair around that Io had brought, and then Io kind of escapes. So, you know, we didn't know at the time that we're going to see them again later on that night, but it was setting stuff up for later on.
Mm-hmm. And like Io Shirai versus Rhea Ripley, that's a match I would be interested to see. It really feels like the women's division has been very intertwined, which makes sense later on in the show.
Then we had Finn Balor coming out. He did do the hand raise thing one time, but then he like turned the sidearms into his kind of double shooter finger guns.
Oh, did he do it once? I didn't even see that he did it once. I just noticed that he wasn't doing it throughout the rest of the show.
Yeah, he just did it once, but then turned it into the shooter finger guns.
Okay.
He was getting a thank you Finn chat. He talked about how, you know, he was losing to a guy in a mask who became the hottest thing in wrestling after beating him, and now he's taking off his mask and he's the hottest thing in the business. You know, the people in the locker room are coming off like fans. He thinks that people in the back should be in the stands instead. Gargano, once he gets out of hospital, he's going to send him back, and it'll not be Johnny Wrestling, it'll be Johnny Watches Wrestling. I never saw Prince Devitt, but this was like easily the best promo Finn Balor has ever done as Finn Balor. And I like Johnny Gargano as a babyface and Finn Balor as a heel, if they play it right, could be, you know, the second best babyface versus heel thing of the year, because Gargano's so likable, Balor's being a bit of a cunt. So I thought this was like, in terms of like how they follow up last week, I think this was like a 10 out of 10 promo for Finn. What did you make of it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, this was beyond what I could have expected. Like, I didn't really see any of Prince Devitt either, and I've always been told that he was brilliant as a heel. I thought this was so good. Like, the line where he said, you know, 2 months ago, I was laying down for a guy in the mask who was supposed to be the hottest thing in the company, and now I've taken off my mask and I'm the hottest thing in the company. It was like, ooh, he went there. He's referencing The Fiend.
Isn't that funny? Because usually,
I normally don't like that kind of stuff.
You hate the shit comment.
I hate them, but this worked for me. Because again, sometimes things just work and you can't quantify them. It just, like, this worked for me because he came across as such a prick and he came across as such a star. And I think even when he was treated like such a star in NXT before as a babyface, he never really clicked for me. Like, this is a Finn Balor I want to see on my TV. Like, I want to know everything that this guy is doing, because now he's unleashed and he has no qualms about just being an utter arsehole to Johnny Gargano, who's the best, right? Like, he's this adorable babyface who everyone loves. Like, the dynamic is perfect here and I can't wait. Like, I think it's brilliant.
Then we had Bronson Reed and his big baps taking on Shane Thorne. Bronson Reed gets the win here. Bronson Reed's not really, like, I know that Bronson Reed's one of those guys who I feel like everybody kind of goes, this guy's going to be great, and he's a big guy who can do a lot, and, like, I agree with all of it, but I go, he's another guy who I'd like to see vignettes from, because I don't really know, like, nothing's drawn me to him yet. But maybe you can fill me in, like, what's the selling point of Bronson Reed so far, do you think?
I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure. I really like Shane Thorne, so I was happy to see this match. Bronson Reed seems to be very good. Like, I like his matches. They're fine. But I feel the same way about Bronson Reed as I felt about Cameron Grimes a few weeks ago. Like, he is good. I like him fine. But I don't really have any big connection. Like, I think the middle of the match where they were doing chops to each other and just, like, lighting each other up was pretty great. It was no Walter PCO, but, like, it was great. I enjoy them just beating the shit out of each other. So this match I enjoyed quite a lot. I don't know. There's something about Bronson Reed that's just not quite there for me yet, because I don't know him and because he's not, again, like, one of the guys that I followed for a long time. But, like, I remember in his promo and vignette him talking about, like, Australian strong style or whatever, and him just, like, being really hard-hitting and stuff. So maybe I just have to see more matches of his and he'll grow on me. Because I'm not mad about him.
Then we had the Kabuki Warrior.
Shane Thorne's fuzzy like vest thing, though. Did enjoy that.
How's this? So Shane Thorne was coming out, and I knew who it was before I even saw. I was like, that's that mighty guy, Shane Thorne.
I'm so proud of you.
I know, and he's done nothing charismatic to deserve me remembering him, but I do remember him. So
that's good. That's a good sign.
Oh, that's the man who's the phone number code.
not anymore.
Not anymore. He's changed. He's moved on. He's developed himself into genetic jobber man. The Kabuki Warriors are in NXT. Kairi Sane and Asuka against Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai for the WWE Women's Championship. I said to Ollie, I was like, so imagine me and you, Sandra, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are we're pals and we're all of a sudden going to become a tag team.
Right.
And they say, right, you guys get to go and face the Women's Tag Team Champions next week, right? And you go, great, mm-hmm. that's brilliant. They go, okay, let us show you your Tron. And it just says Kenny/Sandra. I go, can we work on that a little bit?
I would want a better graphic.
Like,
for sure.
I feel like, who designed that? Like, it was so generic.
Intro to graphic design at Full Sail? I have no idea. Like, it was very generic. And they've had enough time that it should have been a better graphic. Thankfully, the match was awesome, and I didn't even remember about the graphic.
Yeah, the match, I need to call these things out when I see them. But
no, you absolutely should.
The match, though, with Tegan and Dakota against the Kabuki Warriors, this was such a great match because, like, you kind of wanted Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox to do well, but you really didn't want the Kabuki Warriors to lose the titles. So, like, it was so great. And obviously, we were all waiting for the moment where Asuka would use the Green Mist. And of course, she didn't on Dakota Kai. Then she kicks her. Kairi tags in, does the big elbow. 1, 2, 3. This was great.
I thought it was so clever because what they did, like, Asuka does the Green Mist to Dakota Kai, but then she kicks her so that she's face down on the mat. And Io does the, or not Io, Kairi does the elbow to Dakota's back. So she's still face down, and then she covering her face so that the ref can't see that the Green Mist has been used. It's so clever,
it
and it was
genius.
So well done. And then the ref afterwards notices the Green Mist and is like, oh no, what have I done? Clearly there have been shenanigans here, but I've already made my decision and that's final, because that's the rule today.
It was very... Well, the thing is, that's the interesting thing about referees is, like, how do you police it? Can a referee change his mind? Can he not? Or what do you do? So
I prefer when a referee doesn't change their mind. Like, that is what I prefer. That's why I get annoyed with certain types of finishes. But I just thought it was timed so well and executed so well. I thought that Dakota Kai came across as so sympathetic in the match. I feel like this is the first time we've really seen Dakota Kai, like, really come into her own in NXT. I know we've seen some really good matches from her before, but, like, her crawling on the ground after Asuka has the knee bar on her and, like, just, like, really reaching for Tegan Nox. Like, I was with Dakota. Honestly, like, this is the first time I think the Kabuki Warriors really felt like heels to me, and, like, I really just wanted the Valiant Babyfaces to win because Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox are so likable and coming back from injury, and the Kabuki Warriors are just so mean and dastardly and being dicks to them, and it's just not fair, and why can't the good guys prevail? And, oh, this was so good. I loved it.
Do you know what was also lovely was to, and I don't mean this as a shady comment, but it should well sound like, it was lovely to see Tegan Nox be able to get through a good match and not get injured. Like,
no, also
it was,
true.
It was like, and it was a nice thing. It was nice to kind of, because, like, that you're and you know they played up in this post match attack, her injuries. But so the match happens and it's all good and the Kabuki Warriors win. Okay, that's
that hot tag to Tegan Nox. Like, I was on my feet for it. I thought it was so good.
It was very, very good. But post match, Shayna, Jessamyn, and Marina come out, and they get up in the apron. They're going to go for Nox and Dakota Kai. Rhea Ripley comes out. She's coming there. But then Io Shirai blindsides her. A brawl ensues. Then Bianca Belair's out. Candice LeRae runs down to save Rhea. So everybody's fighting and it's all going crazy. And then William Regal's on a podium and he goes, that's it. I've got a solution. War Games! And I went, the reason that you know this is good is I don't really like War Games and I popped the shit for Women's War Games. Like, I was like, what?! So, I mean, I kind of wish that was the only War Games at the show, but
yeah.
So my question to you is, well, I mean, number one, what do you think? I know you love every single bit of it, but so it's going to be Io Shirai and the three horsewomen against Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, Candice LeRae, and who's the fourth?
I don't actually understand who's in the match.
I think
like,
it's supposed
after
to
all
be...
of the shenanigans, I don't understand who's against.
Well, it's
who.
4-on-4. So it's going to be.
Is it?
I assume it's going to be the three horsewomen plus Io Shirai, who's also the heel, against Rhea, Bianca, Candice, and I don't know who the fourth one would be.
Would it be like Dakota or Tegan or?
Oh
someone?
Yeah. So maybe or is it going to be Dakota? Or is it going to be?
Or is it going to be 5-on-5? Like, is it established that it's 4-on-4?
No. All
they
we
didn't
know,
say.
All we know is Rhea Ripley and Shayna Baszler are the team captains.
Right. So, I mean, they could do, like, 5-on-5.
They could do.
I'm even losing track of who was all, like, even out there and involved and all that kind of stuff, because it was just chaos. It was good chaos. I liked the chaos. But, yeah, it seems like they have too many women. They have too many women and need to put more of them in. Isn't that such a lovely thing?
It's really nice to have. Somebody said something on Twitter last night. I thought this is a really good point where they said that the thing the NXT has benefited from the most in having a tour show is to have secondary women stories.
Mm-hmm. It's been brilliant. Like, women were all over this show, as well they should be, because they're fucking great. Like, they're the best thing in NXT right now. And, I mean, like, them and Finn Balor. So it's, I don't know, it made me so happy on this show to see such a focus on the women's division, because they're killing it. They're absolutely killing it. And, like, I understand everyone's motivations and alliances for the most part. Like, that's, I guess, maybe a little bit of my nagging issue. And this is just, you know, something that War Games brings about. Like, why is Io Shirai with the horsewomen exactly? Like, why would they be friends after Io Shirai got beat up by the horsewomen a whole bunch and turned heel because the horsewomen were such dicks to her? Like, I know that it has to be heel versus babyface, but that's just, again, like, a problem with War Games itself. But I think it's going to be probably better than most War Games matches. I just don't like the match stipulation, and I don't think I ever will.
Same. But then, you know, sometimes last man standing can work for me if I like the people in it. More than, like, because if it's people you don't really care about, it's harder to get invested.
Mm-hmm.
Up next, though, we got Tyler Bate versus Cameron Grimes. And, like, I know it was a good match, but I just could not get into this whatsoever. Like, I don't know what it was. Like, Tyler Bate, I mean, he just makes me feel bad about me not being in good shape as he is. Cameron Grimes with the thigh hair. But they were very good at wrestling. I mean, Kelly and Dana ended up coming out to kind of catch Tyler Bate's eye, and that distraction allowed Cameron Grimes to get the win. And then we had the post-match thing. But, yeah, it just didn't click for me as much as I thought it would. Did it click for you?
I liked it quite a bit. I think Tyler Bate deadlifting Cameron Grimes is an impressive visual. I think they are very good at wrestling each other. Like, I really enjoy Tyler Bate and his work, and I think it is disgusting how good he is for being as young as he is, and I don't understand how any human can be in that good of shape. So, you know, there is that. But I don't know. I thought it was a lot of fun. It wasn't like the match that I was going to go back and rewatch necessarily, but I thought it was great.
After the match, we saw as Cameron Grimes left, Kelly and
Dean. It felt like a big deal for Cameron Grimes to get the win over Tyler Bate too, which I think is good because they're still like building Cameron Grimes and Tyler Bate's a little bit more established.
Yeah, and then Killian Dane ends up beating up Tyler Bate, gets in his face and tells him he's coming after Pete Dunne for what Pete Dunne did. I mean, Pete Dunne's got a rematch with Damian Priest next week, so I don't know where that fits in with Killian Dane, but yeah, it's nice to see Killian Dane beating some people up.
I'm into Killian Dane beating some people up, and I'm into intertwined storylines too. Like, Pete Dunne can have more than one thing going on.
Where's Trent Seven?
I don't know. Is he hurt or something?
No, probably just eating chips. God bless him.
Chips sounds so good right now.
We get this really good Angel Garza video package where he's talking about his family heritage, his uncle Hector Garza. You must have been getting some retro Raw feels, Sandra.
Getting some retro Raw feels from this. I absolutely was.
Did you ever think that you would be getting a warm, fuzzy feeling of a 1997 Raw moment involving Mexican people from NXT?
No. No, that is not a place I thought I would ever find myself in life, but here we are, we have arrived, and it's happening. It's happening right now.
Angel Garza, he's got a great look. He's a likable guy, so you know.
I love him. The thing that baffles me about this is that it was very, like, I thought it was a great video package too. I thought it was excellent and well done. And talking about his family history, you did see Humberto Carrillo in one of the family pictures, which I thought was kind of a cool little touch. They didn't even call attention to it, but he was there. The weird thing is, though, Angel Garza has been a heel this entire time, right? Like, he's been really up his own arse. He's like not wanting to shake hands with people in the crowd. He's ripping his pants off to do a gear reveal, which I absolutely love. But he's doing it in such a prickish way. So is he a babyface now?
I guess so.
Like, that's the thing that I am curious about. Because I, mean, I think he could be a babyface. Like, I think he's great.
I think he works better as a babyface.
Yeah, I mean, he is likable and he's great. Like, I want to cheer him for sure. I just hope he doesn't, like, become generic Mexican dude. Like, I want him to still have personality. And I think he will, because I think his charisma just shines through. Like, I had never seen him wrestle before, to my knowledge, before the breakout tournament. And I fell in love with him round one. And if I fall in love with someone round one when I've never seen them before, that's a good sign, right? Because that just means that, like, they're working for me. So he's become one of my faves for sure.
Main event time. It's time for us to mask in his glory. Fuck's sake.
I like his song.
Well,
I stand by it.
Go to the sun.
I know
with
you don't
the
like
song,
it
because it's horrific. It's
I love
so
it.
Rubbish. Like, can you imagine a big title win with mask in his glory? Who cares?
It's limitless, Kenny.
Well, get a song that says that.
It does.
No, but
it
not
says,
one.
Bask
not
in his glory, for he is limitless.
All you hear is bask in his glory from people who say that they're being held in a dungeon and forced to sing it.
I don't know. I hear the whole range of the song and I enjoy it. I think it's nice.
Okay. We get Matt Riddle and Keith Lee taking on the Undisputed Era in the main event. So it's interesting that, you know, Matt Riddle continues to, like, goad Goldberg. Like, he does the jackhammer at one point for a quick kick out. They have a fun match. I mean, Riddle and Lee, they're decent together. You know, they're okay. At least they felt like good enough to be teammates in this. Undisputed Era are great. Kyle O'Reilly is the unsung hero of the Undisputed Era. He is the glue that holds that team together.
He's incredible. He's so good. Like, so, so good.
He's the best. He's the best. Yeah, he's the best in that group. Anyway, so obviously the Undisputed Era come out to get involved because they can't help themselves.
And that it is what they do.
It is what they do. And I'm trying to remember the finishing sequence here. So Riddle hits Bobby Fish with the final flash. Then Lee throws Adam Cole at Roderick Strong. Bobby Fish escapes to go to sleep. And then they both hit Matt Riddle with a total elimination for the victory because Keith Lee's distracted by Cole and Strong. So Unspeed to get the win. Then they put the boots to Riddle and Lee, but then Tommaso Ciampa comes out. He's like, you know, telling Goldie he's going to be back soon, but it all comes up to him taking the mic and saying that he wants the NXT Championship, but Goldie, you're going to have to wait because Daddy's going to war, which means we're getting a men's War Games, which is probably going to be Undisputed Era against Keith Lee, Matt Riddle, Tommaso Ciampa, and I'm guessing the fourth guy might be Velveteen Dream. I don't know anything, but I'm guessing since they beat him up, if he's cleared in time, that would be who it would be.
That would make sense because he also has something, you know, against the Undisputed Era. I guess you could put Dominik Dijakovic in there.
Yeah, so they have options. I mean, I just want to see Balor versus Gargano. So, like,
yeah,
give me Balor versus Gargano, and you can do what you want with the men's War Games. Just don't put that in there.
Balor versus Gargano has to be a singles match. War Games cannot ruin that for us. I think the line of Goldie, you're going to have to wait, Daddy's going to war, the line is great. I'm not excited about this, though. Like, I thought Keith Lee and Matt Riddle versus Undisputed Era was awesome. Keith Lee and Matt Riddle have had kind of an alliance backstage before. We've seen them in segments before. And so it made sense that they would be pals and want to fight the Undisputed Era for getting involved in all their shit, right? So I can buy that. I can buy them as a team. It does feel a little bit thrown together. Tommaso Ciampa being with them doesn't make any sense to me. I don't really understand it. I guess just because they're against Undisputed Era, I guess. So it kind of works, but I don't know. It all feels kind of haphazard and cobbled together for the sake of doing a War Games. And we already have a War Games that I think seems a lot more interesting. So
well, also, this
seeing
is...
two of them on the same show, can't say that I'm like the most thrilled about it.
Well, the women's one feels fresh and it feels new and all that kind of stuff. But this is the third year in a row where we have an Undisputed Era in War Games match.
Yep.
Like... I thought the first...
And I know that they're the faction, so it makes sense that they keep being in it, but like...
I did like the first one a lot more than I liked the second one, from what I remember. I think. Because I'm sure I liked the one with Authors of Pain and Sanity. But I didn't like the one with War Raiders and Pete Dunne Ricochet as much.
Yeah, I didn't really like either of them.
But, yeah, I guess we'll see. I thought overall NXT was the better show, though. I think they kept a pace that never really dipped.
I think there was just a lot more with stakes on it, too, right? Because you had the women's tag title match. You had Finn Balor's first, like, declaration since becoming a baddie. And I don't know. Like, everything just, it felt a little more important to me. Like, other than the contract signing. The contract signing on AEW did feel important. And I know that like, AEW had the tag titles, too. And I don't know why that didn't click as well for me. Probably just... again, the show that I prefer. It's not indictment.
The main event tag match did feel a little bit rushed on AEW. Like, it was good, mm-hmm. but it did feel a little bit rushed. But, and, you know, they did, to me, they did more stuff that would satiate me as a wrestling fan. You know, a big Finn Balor interview, angles, brawls, all the stuff that I like, as mm-hmm. well as good wrestling. So, I think NXT...
Plus, the women were all over the show, which was great.
They were. But NXT's starting to, for me, find its groove as a show.
Yeah.
Yeah, big thumbs up for me.
I loved it.
So that is basically it for us. We are going to be back at the weekend with an overrun, and then on Monday we'll be back with Retro ITR. But Sandra, what are the plugs?
Okay, you can follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes if you want to hear us talk about overrun things and retro content and... Kenny will talk about Crown Jewel and all of the things that we are talking about. We have a retro pay-per-view coming up too, because why not? YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for video content. Lots of cool interviews going up there. InsideTheRopes.co.uk/tickets for tickets to all of the live events. I believe things are on sale right now for Mick Foley, Kenny Omega.
Yep, that's the only two.
That's the only two? Okay. That's what I thought. I wasn't going to say any more names. I literally wasn't. I was like, Bret yeah. Hart? No, that's over. Yeah.
check if any more have been signed before you do anything.
Well, no, because I can't think... Anyway, I couldn't think of anyone else that has even been in the conversation that I know about. So that's totally fine. I was just trying to remember if Bret Hart had happened, because that's where my brain is right now. And
also,
drugs.
On our YouTube channel, you can actually watch Ollie and I do a full live stream of AEW and NXT. And I don't want to... I'm going to tease you, everybody, but there may be an appearance at the end by a certain Golden Prince Angel Bear sent from heaven who was a little bit sleepy.
Aww.
So he may be on there at the end. So, yeah, hope you check that out. And we are looking forward to going to Baltimore next week. It's going to be Inside the Road, so go and check that out at starcast.com. Join us on Fight TV. It's going to be a fun show. We're looking forward to doing it. And Cody, Brandy, and Dustin, I don't... think they've really ever been on a stage before together, so
it should
pressure.
Be excellent. Like, I might actually order that on Fight. I don't know when I'll get a chance to watch it, but I really want to see it.
I'm sure we can sort it out.
Okay.
Who should play us out?
We played Finn Balor last week. Should we play
SCU?
We could play SCU. Yeah, they have
first,
a good tune.
First
They're
tag champs. First tag champs of AEW.
Yeah, let's play them.
Here is SCU, and remember, if you like the content we're doing, you want to support us a little bit more, Patreon is where it means that we get to do all this cool stuff, so please consider, you know, pledging over there if you want to hear more of us. So, thanks for listening, here's SCU! Bye!
Bye! SCU! The pride of the West, SCU. Born to be great, SCU. From the Golden State, SCU. From the mountains to the beach to the Hollywood Hills, pop out to the desert for some SoCal thrills. We run on this team all day and all night.
ring general, the rebel and the violent delight. Our life, it's a bitch. Your life is a bitch. No goals out of reach. Execute rich. You don't be censored. And we can't be ruled. We pity your city. And we pity you fools. Yeah, we Golden State.